right, welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another installment of the PVD Cast. Of course, I'm your host, John Orlando, coming to you with the only podcast that is live and in direct from Providence, Rhode Island, via Columbus, Ohio. And I hope you're all doing real well out there. Just a couple of real quick house cleaning items before we get to my guest. First of all, I really want to say that the last podcast that I did was a little bit of a tribute to my friend Artie, who passed away. And it was tough to do, but I appreciate all the kind comments that people gave me, either through text or voicemail or email or whatnot. I really appreciate it. I felt that that was the best way to honor him, you know, since he loved wrestling so much. But I did get an angry text from my nephew to remind me that William C. Foster was the character's name that he was on that show in Newark. So I apologize. I knew it was going to haunt me if I didn't remember it. I knew as soon as I heard it, I would be so angry at myself for not remembering that. But so anyways, again, I appreciate all the kind words. And with that, we're going to move on to my guest and the intro that I have cooked up. I hope this does not offend him, but now he's smiling from ear to ear. All right. I was going to say the word legend is tossed around quite a bit in sports, but I would say that this man is a legend of independent professional wrestling here in the state of Ohio. Was that too much? All right, ladies and gentlemen, it's Sherman Tank. Tank.
Thank you. I don't know if it's a legend or legend in my own mind or...
Well, I was going to go with the best big man in Ohio, but I was afraid that Jason Bain might hunt me down.
He's indefinitely retired, so...
Oh, I'm taking that. You can take that? All right, well...
Love you, Jason.
All right, well, Tank, since you're joining us on here, let's just start way back at the beginning. How did you get into this crazy business of professional wrestling?
Kind of like the weird story is, you know, I mean, I probably similar to everybody else that's ever done an interview or try to be a part of the business is, you know... At a young age, I was a fan and, you know, had good memories of watching it with my father and my grandfather and whatnot. But my story kind of differs from other people is we moved into a new house, and one summer afternoon I walked out and my neighbor, there was a wrestling ring in his backyard. And, you know, I ran into my mom's, you know, into the house and, you know, was yelling at my mom and dad going, "What is the deal?" And they told me he's a pro wrestler and a promoter, and you know, we just took off from there. You know, he'd bring guys over, and you know, back in the day, like they all, you know, they'd wrestle bears as well,
right?
You
sure,
know, the,
yeah.
the old
the kind
you know,
of carny.
Carnivals
yeah,
things
right,
and stuff
right.
like that. So, you know, like there one day he had a bear chained up to his tree. So that was one day I never went over, but.
I was going to say, you better hope that son of a gun never gets free, otherwise...
Well, there's bears all around here in the Canton area now, so they're all migrating over there over from Pittsburgh. They're tired of those stupid Steelers, so they're coming over here, so... But, yeah, I mean, that's, you know, I was probably six or seven-ish. I mean, I was really young, and then once I got to, you know, 10, 11 years old, you know, I started traveling with him to shows, and, you know, my parents let me... Some of them would be overnight and whatnot, and we, you know, travel locally or even sometimes to other states and stuff. And you know, I'd help them set up the ring, tear down the ring, you know, ring the bell, or play the music, you know, all those little jobs, you know, as a young kid.
And he never let you get in the ring.
I mean,
and bump around any, or because I mean, I know
not at first.
Okay,
not at first. I mean, I kind of got in there and kind of like rolled around, but nothing okay. like, you know,
there was no formal training at that particular point.
No. It just, you know, as time went on, he kind of saw that there was no stopping me. So,
okay. All right.
As time went on, yeah, it eventually happened, but not when that was it. I think I was probably too scared.
Okay.
To yeah. even try, you know, like I'd get in there and I'd pull the ropes a little bit, or you know, slap the mat like a referee or something like that, just to, you know, testing the waters, you know. But yeah, nothing at that young age.
Now, with that being said, were you a big kid? You know, in comparison to, and so at this point, did the guy, you know, who was the promoter, by the way?
It was Chief Don Red Cloud.
Okay, so did Chief ever say, wow, this kid's kind of got some size for a 10, 11-year-old, 12-year-old kid, maybe, you know, maybe somewhere down the road, I got myself a blue chipper, if you will, or something along those lines?
No, not at all. I mean, he looked, I mean, back then, even then, this was, what, late 80s, early 90s, the business was so protected.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't like, oh, well, come on in, kid.
Yeah.
You know, you're my guinea pig today. It wasn't like that at all. It was so protected and so, you know, definitely not like today where you can just, you know, buy a replica belt and you're in the business.
Right.
You know, it's nothing like today. But, yeah, even as time went on, I think he kind of saw that I wasn't going anywhere. You know, we did a little bit of training and stuff like that, but it was so protected. Like, he would just give you what you needed to know right then. There, you know, nothing was discussed about the business or, you know.
Did you sneak and get any of that backstage when you were traveling with him?
Did you sneak
around and go like, oh,
yeah, absolutely.
Fuck this. I'm going to find out how this is done and, like, you know, sneak around or
how
did you get wise to it? Eventually, he clues you in after a while. The old Vern Gagne type of. Way of doing it.
I'm sure like he put some walls down. He took the walls down as time went on, but it was later.
Okay.
Like I was probably 15, 16, something like that, but at that early age and stuff, like carrying jackets and robes and stuff back to the locker room, cuz I mean, a lot of guys wore robes back then.
Sure.
You know? I mean, it's nothing like today.
Right.
They actually that bigger than, you know, bigger than life presence that a lot of guys had back even then in the indies. You know, just taking that, you know, the stuff back to the locker room and stuff, and, you know, you'd run into somebody or you'd run into a conversation and stuff, and it's, you know, they don't tell you have two ears and one mouth for a reason. You know, it's really true. It's like, you know, especially when you're a kid, you know, you walk in, you see, you know, whoever, Greg Valentine or Boss Man, you know, in between contracts or whatnot, and he's doing the indie loop or whatever. You sit there, you shut up, and you listen.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how I picked up a lot of stuff, you know. And I picked up a lot of good information, and sometimes I picked up not so good, you know, just depending on who was back there. So
at what point did you actively start training?
Between Chief and guys like Jimmy Lee and Kid Collins, the true, I think, legends of Ohio indie wrestling, Thunder Morgan, Jesse Salica, Lord Zoltan, guys like that. That's when, you know, I kind of would get in there with them a little bit and kind of, you know, just bump around and, you know, I mean, the first time I ever took a back bump, I swear, like, it was like just a natural thing. It wasn't like, you know, something that it took me time to develop. It was like, it was just one of those natural things. Same thing with, like, running the ropes. I've always, you know, back when I was healthy and stuff, like, that's running ropes, back bumps, stuff like that. I've been the natural thing, and I think it's because from a young age, 10, 12 years old, you know, up until, you know, my first match, I was exposed to that so close.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't like I was watching it on TV, which I was, but I was so close and so involved. You know, it just kind of, you know, seeped in my pores.
Right.
Type situation.
Gotcha.
You know,
gotcha.
It was absorbed.
Uh huh.
So.
All right. So then when you started training with those guys, Chief and all those other folks, Kid Collins, Jimmy Lee, and that, when did you have your first match?
We had a show in Barberton.
Because that's where Chief ran predominantly, right? Barberton, Akron area. He promoted in that
area. Yeah,
and if I remember, Jimmy Lee and Kid Collins was more towards Mansfield in that area, towards there. Okay.
Yeah, it was they ran the Mansfield area. Chief had he had like five or six different areas that he would run, and predominantly Barberton was our big draw at Reynolds Gymnasium. And we were doing a show there. I wasn't even on. I was 17, and, you know, it was earlier in the year, And we're sitting there, and this guy walks up, and I had seen the guy before. I've been on shows, or, you know, I've been at shows with this guy, and he's a big talker, as most guys in the wrestling business is. So, you know, he comes up and goes, "Hey, you know, we had just worked out a little bit," and he goes, I saw you work out. You know, I want you on my show." Cool. That's awesome. So it was like the beginning of April, first show. You know, I was still 17. You know, mm-hmm. I was a couple weeks before my 18th birthday, which, you know, technically, I guess you're supposed to be 18. You know, I did a show up in North Akron, and we were in an old Children's Palace building. They had just went out of business in this big old Children's Palace, and you know, I mean, there's, you know, 100, 150.
Okay, I was gonna ask how the draw was. Was it?
I mean, back then the draws usually were pretty well or pretty good. You know, between Jimmy Lee's and Kid Collins and the Chiefs, you know, we're drawing, you know, 1,500, 2,000 people depending on the night. You know, so seeing these. You know, shows, and then going to this one, we were all kind of like sad. Now people give their right arm to have 150, 200
right,
people.
Right, yeah, right.
You
yeah.
know, in some of these other indies, and you know, I was the first match. It was kind of funny because it was my first show, my first match, and I was like a United States champion.
What?
Like, yeah, it was just like here's a belt. All right, thanks. You know,
really?
Yeah, and I worked this guy called, his name was Pete the Pirate. I ran into him a couple times since then, but
Pete the Pirate,
nice guy.
Okay,
but you know, I don't know which click he ran in or whatnot. But you know, I think we had a pretty decent match for what it was, first match and stuff. Not, but
was a pirate, right? That was his gimmick. Please tell me he was
because Pete the Pirate. And I guess I guess since then there'd been a couple other like pirate type. You know, personas and whatnot, but he was the original that I know of.
Okay, because that's one of my big gripes is gimmicks that are either not thought through on the indies or done completely wrong, or...
He had a patch. I believe he had a patch.
An eye patch?
An eye patch.
Sweet. And a poofy shirt like Seinfeld? Maybe, maybe not.
I don't think he wrestled in it, but he did wear one.
Yeah,
coming
okay.
out, so,
yeah, okay. Yeah, all right. Awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, he had tights. He had long pants on, like wrestling tights. But yeah. But he had some sort of like boot that you'd be like, yeah, that's a pirate.
Oh, you know, okay. It was the little cuffs on the boots.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
yes,
yeah,
sweet.
Yeah. Like he definitely looked like a pirate.
Good.
I mean, I wouldn't call him Johnny Depp or anything. But,
yeah, right.
But
sure.
He was close.
All right. So you're 18, you wrestled your first match, and I assume then from there on you were hooked. You continue to wrestle at different shows with Chief and Kid and Jimmy and all that. But then eventually, though, you do come to Columbus, Ohio to go to college. Correct?
Yeah.
And how did that how was that transition, and how did you balance school with wrestling? Or did you?
Yeah, unfortunately, there wasn't much of a balance.
Yeah.
You know, like I said, we that first show, beginning of April, you know, we had 150, 200 people, whatever. Decent crowd. The funny thing was, like, literally, like, 2 weeks later, I was, like, down in Marengo, which is a little bit south of, I believe, Marion, around the Marion area, and I wrestled in front of four people.
Wow!
Really? Against the Rock and Roll Cowboy, it was his promotion. It was his, you know, he was the promoter, and I literally put him over like $1 million because I got nothing off, and I looked horrible. And I was like, you know, like you're saying, like you were hooked. I was still hooked.
Yeah.
But it was like it was funny to go from 150, 200 to four, and then my very next show was 2,000.
Really?
Yeah. So,
okay.
I mean, it was so crazy the way it fluctuated. But the show that there was 2,000 people at, that's when I met the legendary and newly and sadly deceased Bud Hattery.
Okay.
Referee Bud. You know, and I had been accepted to Ohio State in 96. And so I meet Bud after the show, and, you know, he had been reffing that all night and stuff. And he goes, "Hey, you know, we got to talking. He goes, you need to come down to the local promotion down there, and you know, you're coming to Columbus, so this is what you need to do. You know, come and we got some really good young guys and whatnot, and you'd be a good mix. He goes, come on in. He kind of gave me the impression that he kind of ran things, you know?
Really?
Yeah. So I was like, all right, cool. So, you know, I didn't really think much of it. You know, how, you know, it's like kind of one in one ear, out the other.
Sure, yeah.
So we're kind of talking, and you know, I didn't blow it off, but I was like, I had a confidence issue.
Okay.
So it's just like, eh, he didn't really want me, whatever.
Was it just because you were still young to the business? Is that what confidence was, or like?
All my life.
Okay, all right.
Any aspect of my life, like I've, you know, never thought like I was good enough or
okay,
whatever. All so right. No matter what kind of, if you would ever pay me a compliment when I was younger, and sometimes even now, I'd think that you're trying to work me or, you
just
know,
be polite.
Yeah, you're just like yeah, that. Just okay. Just trying to be nice. You're not being okay. Sincere.
All
right. And, you know, that's one of my, I guess, character flaws. But, so anyway, so I'm sitting in my dorm room, and, you know, one afternoon, and I literally see the infamous Channel 21,
yep,
you know, mm-hmm. public access show.
And, which, of course, is the IWA Carnage, right?
I don't know if it was called Carnage back then.
Okay.
It was IWA something.
Yeah, right.
And I saw Bud. And, you know, I was like, wow, he was kind of legit. So, you know, I think it was late fall of 96. I gave him a call and said, hey, I'm down here. You know, let's hook up and
okay.
And we'll talk. And,
so how was the first time going to the IWA gym? Did you go to the gym first?
Yeah.
The bull and all that jazz?
Yeah.
How'd that go?
Well, I really didn't know anything about bull.
Okay.
You know, I had just been talking to Bud, and he goes, hey, come over to Fifth Avenue, and, you know, 1333 Fifth Avenue. All right, cool. And I don't even think I had a car then down there, because you weren't, freshman year, you weren't really allowed to have cars. It was like second semester, so that's when I finally took my car down. Quarter. We were on quarters back then. So I drove my car over, and it was like, where do I park? There's no parking out front. And I'm like, you know, I'm a country boy. I mean, I'm from North Canton area, but I'm still a country boy. So I'm like sitting there, and I pull around, whatever, and I was like, oh, all right. So then I walk down the side of the building. I walk up, and as soon as I hit the door, You are just hit with an ambiance of
we've talked about it. You know, it's the IWA gym was notorious for being a dump. Let's just be honest.
Yeah, it was.
It was a dump.
Yeah,
there's no two ways about it. Matt Taylor said it's not been the best place. Jeremy Madrox will tell you that it was a dump. I mean, there's no two ways about it.
I thought there was a dead body in there, honest to God. But you know, but this stupid passion, love, addiction to this business,
sure.
I walked up those flight of stairs, and you know, I walked in, and the first person I saw was Bud, and the second person I saw was Cat, and the third person I saw was Bull, and then I see everything else, and I was like, holy crap, what the hell? And I swear to you, it was such a numbing experience, but at the same time, like, you know, it's still new and you're excited.
Right. Sure.
So
then did you start right away with the IWA? Within the next few weeks after meeting with Bull and that, or?
Yeah, like I hung out that day and
okay.
I talked to Bull a little bit and yeah, whatever the conversation was. And
do you remember who was the roster at that particular time?
Yeah, I mean, obviously you had Bull, you had Wimpy, you had Maniac, Mark Mustang,
okay.
That guy.
Was that Casey Stryker was there? Chief Don Yellowfish?
Yellowfish wasn't there. He came
okay.
later.
Okay.
I think Casey Stryker was there. You had the Steel City Slammers, Casanova Click, Damian Cass, I believe, was around.
Okay.
The infamous Earl of Strike Williams, a.k.a. James Buck.
Oh, okay. Wow. That's a name I haven't thought about in forever. Okay.
I think about that man every day. I love that man.
But this was all pre-show. Well, I say this was all pre-Matt Mason, Marcus Dillon, the influx
Shank,
of new
Shank
guys.
Dorsey,
everybody else.
Yep.
So it was a more seasoned.
Yeah.
or the old school roster, if you
will. It was like the old school, but then like you know how Bud said, he goes, you know, we got some young guys, and it was like the click.
Okay.
It was Damian Cass and whatnot. And we just kind of all gravitated towards each other. Like, we instantly, like, you know, Dale Johnson and Chip Allgood and myself with Damian Cass, we all just gravitated towards each other because same age, same
interest
and whatnot. Right. And, you know, we formed a pretty, you know, I think a good friendship, you know.
So, okay, first couple of matches or maybe feuds or rivalries in IWA that you want to highlight? Or did they just kind of work you around with a variety of different
people? Yeah, there was no... I mean, I was like the low guy on the totem pole. Okay. Like, I don't think I was like in any type of, you know, big ideas or big storylines or anything like that. My first match with the IWA was Eastside. I forget what... You probably know it's the Dome.
I know it's now a golf center, isn't it? Over there in Whitehall?
Yeah.
Is that it?
Yeah, Whitehall, Bexley area, whatever.
Yeah, there's a Dome, and I think now it's like a... I don't know what it used to be, but it's now like an indoor golf center.
Possibly.
Where you can, you know, work
on your swing. It was a really cool building. Sure, sure. It was a really cool building.
Yeah, okay.
And my first match was with Maniac Mark Mustang. Mm-hmm. Great guy. Great, awesome guy. And we had a great hard-hitting.
He worked tight.
Yeah, and that's how I'm the same way, and we just complimented each other. Two big guys, and the fans definitely I think got their money's worth.
Cool.
You know, it was a good experience, and you know, and I think from then on, like my, I don't want to call it star power or anything like that, but because you know, politics and pro wrestling go hand in hand, but
sure,
but in the fans' eyes, I think that's when I started kind of, you know, developing myself and breaking out a little bit and so
how long were you in the IWA?
Oh man,
so if you got there, what you said, 96, so you were there till
I had started in 96, like I got there in 96. I didn't really start anything match wise until like 97, I think early 97. And, man, I think I took one break, and I don't know if it was, like, creative difference or something like that, or just school or whatnot, but, I think I left, I think it was, like, 99?
Okay.
Somewhere in that range.
Gotcha. So, okay. All right.
So, you know, two and a half years.
2.5 years, yeah. But during that time, too, because I remember a story that you told during that time, you garnered some attention of ECW.
Yeah.
That was 98, wasn't it? 98, 99? Or was that a little bit later
like,
on?
I think it was like 97.
Okay. You want to talk about the experience of trying out for ECW?
Oh, man.
And this is where the fireworks will begin?
Yeah, sure.
I know the story.
I'm sure it will. by that time, like, you know, we had the influx of Dorsey and Dylan and, you know, great additions to the roster. And there were some other guys, and I'm probably going to forget their names, but then and then Mason. You know, our clique, I don't want to call it our clique, but it was our clique. I mean, it was just a bunch of guys. It wasn't like a gang. We didn't do politics. You know, we just hung out. We had the same interests and same. But we started working, branching out other than the IWA. We'd be going to Dayton for Roger Cox, who, again, recently passed away. Canada, West Virginia. I mean, we were traveling pretty decently. And we had sent some stuff into ECW. And it was myself, Mason, Marcus Dillon, Shank,
and the click. The click.
I don't know if Damian Cass did or not, but there was a handful of us that kind of sent some stuff in, and you know, they had done some stuff previously. I was kind of limited with school, when and where I could go.
Sure.
And, you know, it basically came down, we were supposed to go to Evansville, Indiana for a show, and it was me, Dorsey, the Click, and Mason, and we all took off, and we're supposed to be down there for like, tryout matches or whatever, and we get down there, which, from Columbus, I think it was like a 6-hour drive.
That's a haul.
Yeah, there's not a direct route, and so we finally get down there, and the students from Schmeichel's Academy drove up from Texas. So we drove all that way and got nothing. So,
yeah.
So, you know, whatever. I mean, we were disappointed, but, you know, I mean, they're Shawn Michaels students. What are you going to do?
Yeah, right.
You know,
yeah,
I mean,
yeah, exactly.
So there's we kind of, they invited us to stay for the show and stuff. We stayed for the show and,
did you directly deal with Heyman?
No.
Or it was Dreamer?
A little bit with Dreamer, a little bit with, Nova.
Okay.
And, Fonzie, Bill Alfonso. Okay. You know, we were constantly just talking to them. I mean, okay. You know, we talked to whoever, but so there was that time, and you know, that not so much the extreme stuff, but it was exciting. It was different.
Sure,
you know,
yeah.
You had WWF,
yeah.
You had WCW, yeah. And then you had ECW, and it was a good. We were young guys, so it was like sweet. This is what you know where
right.
we should be.
Right.
You know, this
yeah.
is the, you know, this is the first step. And so we're kind of sitting there and whatnot, and you know, it's one of those shows that just you're like, we could be here,
sure,
with a little bit
sure.
of work,
yeah.
a little bit of you know, polishing and stuff. This is us.
Yeah.
This could be us.
And then eventually they came to do a show at Newport, correct?
Yeah,
that's when
all hell broke loose. Yeah, so you know, they kind of smartly. You know, they kind of use, like, the local guys to kind of get the word out and promote and stuff like that. Street team type situation. No problem with that. It's all part of paying the dues. Paying,
sure.
You know. So you kind of, you promote the show. They're coming into town. We go early, set up the ring. No problem with that. Done it a million times. And I'll tell you what, I've set up and tore down tons of rings over a long period of time. And I swear to you, that was the heaviest, most solid ring I have ever it like a side rail of that thing. It took six guys. It was
really?
So heavy. Yeah, I mean it was like steel, like heavy, thick
cast iron.
Yeah, yeah, it was
hardcore.
Yeah,
no pun intended.
Yeah,
if you will,
yeah,
pun intended.
Yeah, it sucked, but we did it. We loved it. You know, so we went and got changed, whatnot, and we were all kind of paired up, and I was anticipating going with Mason. You know, we
okay.
had worked a little bit together. And we had a good chemistry together.
Okay.
And he had to go do something real quick. So he was gone. So they put me with another guy, a local guy I was friends with, just never wrestled him before. Sexy C, Shane Christian.
Oh yeah.
He was in the building.
Which he probably come up to your belly button.
Yeah,
like,
he was a little guy.
Like 5'3".
Well, he was, and I thought this would be a good mix because it was like, you know, he's a little guy, I'm a big guy.
Sure.
You know,
yeah.
he'd fly
yeah.
around and
right.
I'd catch him and, you know, throw right. him and all kinds of stuff. And we kind of went through our match and it was okay. It wasn't spectacular or super or anything like that, but it was solid. And then I put him over. And I thought they'd get, you know,
excited for that
yeah,
or whatnot.
Just,
you get some compliments.
The Spike Dudley.
Yeah.
The Spike
yeah,
Dudley
yeah,
type
right,
thing.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
David and Goliath kind of thing. And the finish was, I thought it was awesome. And, you know, I had a couple guys come on and go, hey, it was good.
Yeah.
You know, just,
yeah.
that was good. And then Matt came back and he worked, I forget who it was, and he did his thing and everybody kind of went through and Click did their thing and, you know, they got a good standing ovation. They did really well. Which they, I think they worked each other, and as a tag team, they're solid. But even as they were going at each other, they just complimented each other
right,
so well.
Yeah.
It was just
and didn't,
awesome.
Didn't they get a dark match out of that too?
Yeah, I believe so.
That
yeah.
for that show.
Yeah, they traveled after shortly after that. They traveled with them for a while.
Okay.
Yeah,
doing darks and that.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. And which they totally deserved. They,
sure.
You know,
yeah.
They definitely
without
did.
A doubt, yeah.
But after we kind of went through and stuff, the ring was clear. There was not a soul in sight. And we're sitting there talking to Nova, and I think it was Sal, Big Sal.
Mm-hmm.
And we're just kind of sitting there going, hey, man, is it cool if Mason and I get in there and just kind of, you know, work out a little bit? Sure, jump on in there. All right. So we get in there, we start working around and stuff like that, and da-da-da-da-da. So we get down, you know, we're kind of, you know, 8-9 minutes into this thing, and Mason hits whatever finisher he was doing or whatever. I didn't really notice as we were kind of working, kind of like blood in the water. The sharks
more
started
guys come out.
Yeah, the ring was
watch.
completely surrounded. And Mason hits his finisher, and I'm sitting there, and he goes, Mason's covering my head like a deep pin. And I hear, muffled, I hear, kick out, kick out. And it's like 1, 2, 3. And Mason rolls off, and the last thing I hear is, you should have kicked out. And I was like, okay. And by the time I literally turned around, I had guys in there throwing fists, kicking, punching. It was.
But why? Did they feel that it was disrespectful? Did you ever figure that out? I mean, I imagine.
Like, no.
I'm sure nobody kicked you and punched you and go, hey, this is for being a dick. You know what I mean? No, there wasn't a reason.
I really don't know.
Okay.
You know? And it's like, you know, I think there was two or three guys on me. There was two or three guys on Mason. And they just literally, like, stretched us for, I mean, I don't even know how long. It felt like forever. And I remember Mason was in the corner, and somebody, like, grabbed his balls or whatnot. And he looked over, and he thought it was one of the girls, Elektra.
Yeah.
But it wasn't Elektra. It was Sandman. And it wasn't like he, like, kind of, you know, gave him a little tug or anything like that. Like, he literally, like, I grabbed him and tried to rip him off. And I was like, what the hell is going on? And then I'm getting the hell beat out of me. And then it was Tom Marquez and Chili Willie. And I had talked to them before the show and everything, before we all set up and everything. And they were cool as hell.
Yeah.
You know? And basically, you know, like, you're kind of sitting there, and it's like, do you fight back? Because then who else is going to jump in? Or do you just sit there and take the ass beating? You know? I mean, I was a young kid.
I'm still puzzled by this. That's why I'm standing here staring at you. Yeah. You're sitting here staring at it because I don't understand what the ethics are. You know, we all know there's an etiquette.
Absolutely.
That many of the fans don't know. There's an etiquette backstage. Yeah. I just don't know where this falls into that etiquette. Yeah. That's what I'm trying to figure out.
Sitting back then, like, I'm thinking, I mean, do I fight back and get
more
guys jumping on me?
How did it stop? Who stopped it?
This is the thing. Is like, you know, they get me up and they did call this move, which, you know, I'm thinking they're thinking, okay, let's see how tough these guys are and how you know, if they can take an ass beating.
Sure. Yeah,
I'm fine with that. I'll take an ass beating. You know, I'm not a puss or anything, but so I'm sitting there and they whip me off. And they said, you know, duck one, take one. All right, cool. I ducked a double line, and all of a sudden, like, I feel something sweep my foot. And I had these, if you remember back in, like, the late 90s or whatever, like, the high-tech Magnum combat boots.
Yeah,
you know,
right, yeah.
Public Enemy, Scott Hall, all those guys used to wear them. Well, I had changed mine up. I took the bottoms off, or I had a cobbler take the bottoms off and put a wrestling boot bottom on.
Okay.
So
it looks like a combat boot, but it's soft.
But it's a wrestling boot.
Yeah, right.
You know, it's flat. But I have wide feet, and these were kind of narrow shoes, narrow boots. And dude swiped my foot. I take a step, and I heard my ankle pop. And I'm worried about my ankle. I take a step, and I see two huge boots coming at my face. So I kind of roll through. At the last second, literally almost took my head off, rolled through, and they kicked me out of the ring and said, get your ass out of the ring. And Vic Grimes or somebody helped me back to the locker room. Took me back to the bathroom where all of our stuff was. And, like, I swear to you, like, my ankle swole up so much.
You couldn't even get the boot off?
I didn't want to take the boot off.
Oh,
because
for fear of,
for
yeah,
of what's going on.
Right, hyperextending it or whatever. Yeah.
Well,
right.
I thought it was broke.
Broke.
So I left my boots on, and, you know, I had my street clothes on, and I come out of the bathroom, hobbling out of the bathroom, and I see, like, Dorsey and the Click. They're getting theirs now. I was like... So I look up, and Vic Grimes is up there, and he's like, hey, man, you cool? And I'm like... No, but thanks.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
for looking
right,
out.
Yeah, yeah.
And I talked to Nova a little bit after that, and, you know, explained the situation. He goes, "Dude, I didn't even know."
because he was not there. He was not.
Well, he
in
was
that.
He was kind of there, but he was just watching. Like, he wasn't studying or anything. He was just kind of enjoying the show. So, so the situation was, I was talking to somebody, and they told me that New Jack swiped my ankle as I was hitting the ropes, and that's how I busted up my ankle.
Yeah.
And I was like, why? Like, what the hell's the end game? Why would he do that?
Right. Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
You know, obviously they're trying to protect their spot. They're trying
to.
You know, but it was just an ass kicking. And like I said, I'll take an ass kicking all day. I have no problem with that. But something like that, literally, like we stayed for the show. We took down the ring, and by the time I got home, which I only lived a couple miles from there, it wasn't a big drive or anything. My girlfriend at the time lived on the third story of her apartment building, and I went over to her house, and I literally had an army crawl up because I couldn't put any weight on it. But it was so swollen, I had to literally put a bucket of ice and water and soak it for 2-3 days. And
so was that the end of ECW for the tryouts for you?
You know what? It was the end for a lot for me, because that was the start of a lot of frustration for me through the business, because shortly before that, the whole IWA thing ran its course. We left tired of you know, broken promises.
Sure.
Empty, anything that was promised to us. And I don't want to say that, like, we deserve something.
No,
but
no.
But from there's a lot of equipment issues and shows being canceled and a lot of stuff going on that we weren't privy to. And we just got fed up. And left. And, you know, I was injured. I was tired of it. I left for a little bit.
Right. So, and the rest of the guys, like Mason and Dylan and several of those guys, moved on over to FIW, correct?
Yeah, we all left.
And you went too?
Yeah. We all left. But it wasn't like, well, if you're going, I'm going. It was, you know, and I've always kind of stood by this, is like, everybody cuts their own deal.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah.
Like, we might be the same level of talent, but you're going to negotiate your deal. I'm going to negotiate my deal. If we end up in the same place, awesome.
If not,
right. And it's not, you know, it wasn't like, well, if you're going, I'm going. If he's going, we're going. But if he doesn't go, nobody goes. It wasn't like that at all.
Okay.
But, you know.
But by the time,
I think we all were tired of all the
right.
the crap that we were just like, it's time to go. This is a new thing. It does there, sound too good to be true.
There were a lot of empty promises on that end.
Not at first.
Right.
But stuff did eventually.
Right.
Shit hit the fan there too. So
yeah, sure. So did you take time off to heal the ankle and then go to FIW, or did you? Because I remember a story you telling me that you guys all met with Mark Stone. And you kind of had several meetings before you ever wrestled, correct?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, he brought us over to the gym before we even decided to leave. I forget what was going on with Bull and his situation, but it was the Click who, they set up the meeting.
Okay.
And said, hey, this guy's interested in you, and you.
Okay.
All right. Doesn't hurt to talk.
Right, no, not right, yeah, sure.
So we're sitting there, we're talking and whatnot, and he just lays it out. We're at his gym, and we're comparing apples to apples. Okay, yeah, so, you know, we're comparing apples to apples. Like, you have this gym over here, which, in many aspects, it's a health hazard. But we put up with it for so long, you know, and you know, and we dealt with it. We didn't really bitch or complain about it, but we just knew it wasn't right.
Yeah.
You know, and then we come to this other place and it's like nice, new, clean. Didn't smell.
Professional.
Yeah, it was more professional. You know,
right,
they had
yeah.
an office.
Right.
They had a really nice office. They had a big gym area with a real, like, a big size, you know, professional ring. And, you know, and then, you know, they were talking, like, hey, this is where we're running. This is the schedule. They had everything going.
Yeah, right.
You know, there's more production, more, you know, this, that, and the other thing. and here's your money. Okay.
So it was a better payday than IWA.
There wasn't a payday in IWA.
Well, I mean, you said it, not me.
I mean, there was when I started.
All right, but by this time,
and then it dried up.
Issue. Yeah, okay. Yeah. All right.
And it was just like, you know, I haven't had an issue with Bull in a while, or, you know, that was, what, 15 years ago? Whatever. But, you know, there was an issue with, you know, we were going to his shows, we were setting up, you know,
You were doing a lot of work for nothing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Like, right. You know, and we weren't running in Columbus.
Sure.
We're all outside of Columbus.
Right.
So you're driving an hour and a half to,
right,
Chillicothe or Washington Courthouse,
yeah,
and all those,
right,
towns,
yeah,
all those towns. Marion, and loved it because we were having good matches.
Sure.
Setting up, tearing down, going to after parties, whatever, not getting paid.
Mm-hmm.
Then during the week, we'd have 2-3, sometimes 4 nights at the gym training his guys.
Mm-hmm.
Why he sat in the office and talked. Now, I didn't necessarily think he had to be in there with all of his trainees, but I thought you needed to be present.
Sure, yeah, right.
You,
yeah,
know, I,
right,
mean, that's just a given.
Right.
What if somebody gets hurt?
Yeah.
Some of the trainees, like Shank, had been training for, I don't know, 6 months maybe, when he started training guys, you know?
Right, which he's still at that point learning.
Learning.
And I mean, there's no reason for,
yeah,
that. And, yeah, no. That happens on a lot of different
ends. Everywhere.
Yeah, let's just not, you know, not throwing Bull Miller under the bus. That,
no, no, absolutely not. No, no,
it,
no.
It happens at a lot of indie promotions,
yeah,
or a lot of indie companies.
I know Jimmy Lee. I know Jimmy Lee's got a training center. I know Cody Hawk's got a training center. I haven't been there. So the only training center that I've been to in recent year was Jeff Cannon's.
Right.
And just judging by how Bull ran his compared to how Jeff Cannon runs his, that's like,
it's night and day.
It's night and being on the sun. Like, I mean, it's so far, 180 degrees.
Yeah.
It's 360. Like, gotcha. I mean, it's so,
yeah, right.
You know?
Right. So getting back to FIW for a minute. So, you started wrestling in FIW.
Yeah.
Then why you're still there? Because I'm trying to think. I don't think you were around when I came in. Because I came in February of 2002.
Mm-mm.
So you were gone.
Mm-mm.
So what exactly, why were you gone? Was this...
So everything was going great.
Uh-huh.
You know, we were running shows. We,
right,
were making money. The crowds were packed.
Sure, yes.
And then, you know, we had all this production. We had...
Uh-huh.
You know, everything that we were promised.
Right.
And then slowly but surely, this disappeared. That disappeared. I don't think our money ever disappeared, but it was just like stuff just started fading away. A show would get canceled here, a show would get canceled there. That happens.
Yeah,
but
sure,
it became more of a regular situation.
All right.
And it was kind of funny because Mark Stone had... The, you know, the promoter had his group of guys, and then we kind of came in, and with a few exceptions, most of his guys weren't really that good.
Sure, right.
And I'm not saying we were awesome.
Right, no, right.
But,
yeah,
we were a little bit better than what,
sure,
they were. But,
right,
like I said, there were a few exceptions that were pretty
sure,
damn good.
Yeah.
And they were all young. They were young to learn,
mm-hmm,
which was great. So anything that we were able to teach them, we all kind of meshed. So, you know, after a certain point, though, you know, I think we all, and by all, I mean our clique plus his guys that stayed around, because a lot of them started quitting,
mm-hmm,
because they had to share the limelight with us. And sometimes, and most times, were overshadowed by us. You know, so the guys that hung on and then our clique were kind of just like, we know we can do this. We know we can do this better. Let's get together and have a meeting. And as God is my witness, I have been I have been vilified by a ton of people because of this, that I called this meeting. It is so far from the truth. it was actually one of his guys.
Really?
Mark Mattis is the one who, you know, and I had, we had talked.
Yeah, right, yeah, yeah.
But I'm like, hey, if you call, if you set the meeting, I'll come.
Yeah, right, yeah.
So, you know, we met over there off campus, Tommy's Pizza.
Yeah.
And it was just a centralized location because everybody lived around, and it was just a centralized location. We all met, and the guys who kind of, like, from my memory, that kind of head up the meeting was... It was kind of weird because I was the more experienced person.
Okay.
Which, not by much.
Sure, right, yeah.
But you had Dorsey,
Mason, Dylan,
and then some of his guys. Oh, Trent Baker and the Rugby Thug and some other guys. And we're all kind of sitting there going, all right, well, if we pool our money, we can give it a run at this. You know, we can, you know, everything that Bull did, we can do better. Everything that Mark did, we can fulfill longer. So, and then self-sustain.
Okay.
So, and everything was good, I thought, because everybody voted, like, is this what we want to do?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's what we want to do. Literally, the next, I don't know how long it took, I was getting a call by Stone going, why are you trying to, like, steal my talent and my towns and all this and that and the other thing? And I'm like, dude, like, first off, it's not me. I'm not stealing anything. But you're not running, so it's not stealing your towns. You know, it's just, you know.
And that's where the heat began?
Yeah, the heat began. And then, you know, and from my point of view, I guess Mark confronted Mason and Dylan, and they put it on me. I'm like, now, me and Dylan, we've been friends, you know.
But kind of unexpected.
Totally unexpected.
Sure, yeah.
We were friends. We weren't as close as what Dorsey and I were or Mason and I were. Like, me and Mason, we are like, we are so alike, it's crazy.
Sure.
You know, and you know, that's why either we're the best of friends or the worst of enemies. You know, because... You know, we're like stepbrothers, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So it's like, we hate each other or we love each other. And I was so dumbfounded going, why is this getting pinned on me? Because it was your guys
that thought about
put everything out there.
Put everything together.
So I was like, why? You can't blame me.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it was Dylan. It was Mason. I don't know what Mark Mattis had. I don't think he went back. And then eventually Dorsey went back.
Because you did not go back to FIW for a while.
No, for the longest while.
For the longest while. Because, side story, I remember getting a call from Mark in regards, I forget what the first time I met you was some show that we ran in Reynoldsburg, and you came down to work it.
That was the last FIW show, to my knowledge.
Was it Endgame 2002? November of 2002?
It sounds familiar.
Yeah. Well, the funny part was this, though. You had a website, correct, at this time? Or you had posted something about, literally, quote, Sherman Tank is dead.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And he bought it hook, line, and sinker, because I got this call like, hey, did you hear that Sherman Tank's dead? Yeah. Well, in all honesty, I kind of knew who you were, but I didn't know you were. I'm like,
yeah.
Okay. You know, like, I didn't know how to respond to it. I'm like,
Yeah, that got a lot of traction real quick. Yeah,
really? Because I'm like,
I got a lot of calls like over that.
Literally or metaphorically? Like, and then he called later, like later on, like the next day or something. He's like, never mind. I talked to his wife, and his wife said he's just metaphorically dead. He's not gonna have the character around. He's fine. Jim's fine. I'm like, okay, well, good to know. Again, but I was completely baffled by this. So I want you to know, you got one over on him. He bought a hook, line, and sinker.
Yeah, that was no.
Was this your angst-ridden like post?
Well, it's like, you know, like between the IWA crap,
right,
and the FIW crap, and then all like my boys turning back on me.
Yeah,
I was just like, you
know
what? I've been in this for a while. I love it, but I don't.
Yeah.
I gotta focus on school. This is like 2000.
Yeah,
and I was like, man, I just gotta focus on school and. You know, I graduate and stuff like that in 2001, and so I'm like, you know what? I'm done wrestling. I'm done. I just
Nothing. You didn't even do anything in between, like up here in the northeastern part. You didn't do anything. You were completely...
I was like doing like one or two shows a year.
One or two
year.
Shows
yeah,
a year.
I mean,
I didn't drop out totally,
but I was doing one or two shows a year.
Okay.
And, but I was just like, you know, because there was so much drama and everything.
Yeah.
But it wasn't like, it wasn't me. Like, I probably was feeding into it. But
as we all
but
do.
I didn't
yeah,
start it.
Sure, right.
Like,
yeah, 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 right.
But
right,
I got the blame for it, so I'm like, screw this.
It's easy. I can tell you, too. It's easy to get roped into that drama.
Yeah. Because it's like, it's like a pissing match. Like,
yeah.
You guys can piss all over, but you're still going to get pissed on.
Right. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So
no,
it's like,
most definitely.
And I hate backing down. Like, you know, we can have a disagreement. I could be wrong, but you're going to see my side. You know?
Okay.
Whether it's right or wrong. But, you know, but at the same time, if I'm wrong, I'm going to say I'm wrong, you know? And I've been wrong a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But overall, like, if, you know, I didn't think I was wrong. Oh, you know, I just wanted to wrestle, I wanted to be respected, and I wanted to be paid.
That's all you can ask for in this business.
No, absolutely.
Well, then we fast forward to, like, I think 2004, 2005, you've been gone quite a bit, you know, except for, like you said, you were still doing one or two appearances, correct? Even during that time frame before you come to OCW, correct? Before you came, you were still doing like one or two shows here and there. What made you decide to come to OCW?
Well, if you've ever been part of this business, like literally, if you truly love the business, you can leave, but you can't stay away.
Right.
It's like an addict with an addiction.
Yeah.
It takes a lot to stay away.
Mm-hmm.
And I had been, you know, I had gone to shows, especially up here and whatnot, up in the Northeast Ohio area and whatnot, because I had moved back to deal with some family issues and whatnot. And I had gone to shows and stuff like that, and there were some good shows, and there were some bad shows, and then there were some horrible shows. And I had almost started to work with a group, and by chance, and literally, leading up to what I'm assuming was Endgame, right? The FIW show.
Yeah, the FIW show.
I had little to do or little conversation with Dorsey,
Dylan
Mason,
all those
guys. You know, I was focused on my career, you know, and the finance world and stuff like that, and trying to get that going and whatnot. And I, you know, it was just like, we did that. I got burned. I'm not going back. There's nothing for me.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't know who called me first, but for Endgame, but it was like, I think I got a text from Matt and a call from Percy. And I was like, let me think about it. I'll get back to you. I eventually did it. And it was like, we had never left.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, between that time and then when I was going to OCW, still, even then, I had very... text messaging was not invented.
It was like
AOL. Like, it'd be a message between me and Dorsey, or me and Matt, or something like that. And it'd be very sparingly. Because I was busy.
Right.
And honestly, like, there was an old wound that I wasn't really willing to open up yet. So I heard Dorsey quit. He was done for a while. And I saw, you know, through whatever, the indie message board, that Mason had started working with OCW. So I kind of, and they had a lot of buzz.
Sure, yeah, right.
OCW in general. So just, I kind of started looking around online and whatnot, and Mason, I think, invited me to a show.
Because wasn't it a West Lafayette show? I believe, correct?
Well, there was one previous.
Okay.
But he invited me to.
Yeah.
And I was just like, I was like, you know what? Like, you know, I don't have time. You know, I was almost like you see a girl you're interested in and just like you're playing hard to get.
Yeah.
Or she's playing hard to get.
Yeah,
I was playing hard to get. But at the same time, it's like I didn't want to go back there. I didn't want to an old wound. And then I saw the West Lafayette show coming up. It was him and Jeff and the Cage.
Oh, Cage, yeah. Yeah, okay.
And he had said, hey, why don't you come on down? And I was like, oh, I might. We'll see. And I just got in the car one day and drove down. And I got down there and, you know, he's like, hey, why don't you, you know, just come in, knock on the back door, come on in, whatever. I knew him.
Yeah, right, yeah.
And I'm not, I don't like walking into a show just, hey, I'm here, you know.
Yeah, right, then, yeah, right,
and
yeah.
And then people like, new yeah. place, what, who are you?
Who are you? You know? What are you doing here?
Yeah, what are you doing? Yeah. And you're not supposed to be here. So, like a fan, I stood in line, I paid, and I actually saw some people I knew in line. But I thought that was really weird. Yeah. Like, they were younger than me. So I thought that was really weird. And it kind of plays into another reason why I came to OCW. But sat down for the show, and I was like, wow, this is pretty sweet. Like, the action was good. Like, the matches were all good. There wasn't a match on that card that was bad that I can remember.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And after the show, I was just kind of sitting there. And Matt came out, and his jaw dropped. He ran over and gave me, I went out to, slap him five, that, the bro hug.
Yeah,
slap
sure.
five,
yeah.
hug, whatever. He goes, get that the hell out of here. And he gave me, like, a big hug and stuff like that. And, at that point, from that point on, we were, like, inseparable again. It was just, like, wheels spinning. We took off.
And off yeah. you went.
So he's like, dude, you have to come back. And I was like, yeah. I kind of want to, but at the same time, I don't want to. I don't want to wrestle. Like, I don't mind being back. I'll do something, but I don't want to wrestle.
When did you decide to? Because, I remember the setup. The setup was brilliant. You were a supposed fan
mm-hmm.
that Jeff, if you remember, was looking for a tag team partner to take yeah, on was... Matt. And I don't remember who Matt's partner was. I can't remember. But Matt had a partner, and you came out of the crowd only at the time then in which to screw over Jeff, and therefore you and Matt became the A-list.
Yeah.
Which was a brilliant, brilliant storyline.
I liked
it. Beautiful plan. But at what point did you decide, yeah, we're going to go with this idea?
Well, I said I didn't want to wrestle. Mm-hmm. He goes, why don't you come back and just be, like, my enforcer, my bodyguard?
Sure, right.
Sweet. Okay. I can do that.
All right.
I don't get beat up a little. I might get beat up a little bit, but I'm not going to take a lot of punishment. And
right,
I get to beat people up. I can do that. So we did that, and we did the whole setup with, at Hopewell and whatnot,
sure, yeah.
and it just exploded. Like, people bought it. People liked it.
Yeah.
They liked to hate it.
Right, and but it got a reaction that was incredibly strong,
yeah.
And that's what you want, yeah.
And between Matt and Jamie and I was like, me and Matt have a chemistry, and Jamie and I developed a chemistry real quick. It was like a match made in heaven. It was perfect.
Off and running.
Yeah. Literally. Because my first show after that back, I was like, it was like a fundraiser or something like that for Beastmaster's stepdaughter or something.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And,
yeah.
For one of her, like, pageants or whatnot, and we're sitting there, and I'm driving up to this area, the campground thing that we were having the show at, and it was supposed to be, I'm expecting to be an enforcer. I almost didn't even bring my gear, and literally, I walk in, and somebody goes, hey, you're working Jeff in the main. What? No. I'm not a wrestler anymore. I'm just an enforcer. Nope, you're working Jeff. All right. And we went out
there.
But
it was like old hat, wasn't it?
Yeah. I had never worked. I had seen Jeff a few times.
Right.
We literally, like, kept missing each other. Like, we were in similar circles, but we're never in the same circle.
Right.
So I knew of him. I didn't know mm-hmm. him, close. And we went out there, and I think that was the first time we ever worked. And I thought the match was awesome. It was everything clicked. We worked really well together. Got the reaction. It was awesome. I couldn't have asked for anything more. And I was like, all right, I'm back. This sucks. I'm back, but it sucks. So, and then for, like, the next three or four shows, or the next recent shows, it was me and Jeff in the main.
All over the place, including that brawl in Newark where you guys just literally tore each other apart all around that armory, which was another great match.
Yeah, that was actually one of my favorite matches of all time.
Yeah,
was,
really?
Was me and Jeff, Falls Count Anywhere in Newark. It was just so fluid.
Yeah.
Like, there was no thinking
to
it.
And
there
the
was
fans
no,
ate that. They ate it off. They were really into it.
I mean, it's one thing. It's one thing for you know, Jeff's like what, 260, 270?
270-ish,
270.
Yeah.
Backdropping a, you know, 300 some pound guy on on the floor. Yeah. That makes a big sound, man.
It does.
So doesn't tickle either, but yeah, I mean, it just everything just flowed so well and it worked. So
in OCW, you've been heel and face, and I know you've worked around at different companies throughout, you know, West Virginia, Ohio, Pennsylvania, and all over the place. Which do you prefer, heel or face? Or the pros and cons to both?
See, I kind of prefer face for somewhat selfish reasons, but at the same time, like, I'm just me. Like I don't go out there and, you know, I don't go out there like a Robbie Starr or Joey Vengeance or Matt Mason and like, yeah, baby, let's go.
Right,
you know,
yeah,
like, that's
right,
just not me.
Right.
Like, my heel and my face persona is just the same thing. It's just the reaction I get. Mm-hmm. You know,
what do you attribute that to? You think just the booking? You think the booking helps in getting you the face pop as
that,
opposed to...
That has
to,
something to do with it. It has something a little bit to do with my opponent.
Okay.
How good they are.
Right, sure.
Because the fans are going to feed off that person. But, you know, personally, I think it's when I come out of the curtain, you know, I'm not some 6'7", you know,
right,
totally jacked up dude, but I come out and I have a presence that's different than 90% of the guys they're going to see on the indie level.
Right, sure.
So they're either going, oh shit, or all right, this is going to be good.
Okay.
You know, like, they're going to either be pissed off or scared, or they're going to be like, all right, this guy's going to be some, you know, kick some ass. So, you know, it just depends on the situation, and then it just escalates from there.
Gotcha. Now, I know, you know, much like I told Matt Mason, we could talk on and on, because we have only covered, like, probably half of your career. But I got to get this in, because we're running a little bit long here.
Oh, we can always do a part two or part three.
Oh, you got it. You got it. I know that...
Because this has been very tame.
It has.
Yeah, it has.
Surprisingly, it has.
Yeah. I was ready for some stuff.
Some venom, a little vile, you know?
It's a little bit different, like, because, you know, we're doing this in my house, and it's a little bit different to like, I've done, you know, podcasts where, like, we're at a you know, a studio or
right,
a neutral location, and I'm kind of not comfortable, and that makes me just blurt out some vulgar shit, but you know, in an opinionated, my point of view kind of way. But in my house, I kind of feel reserved. Like, I shouldn't be saying that. but yeah,
well,
I understand.
Well, I got to ask, because you alluded to it earlier. You got some knee problems. And can you give maybe the folks that are listening at home a little recap of how the knees are, or what's the prognosis? What's the diagnosis? How's things looking?
Because
as you mentioned, it's been 15 years of wear and tear. 96. So, yeah, 18. Yeah. I'm not good at math.
Yeah,
I'm a very good talker, but I'm not a very good math person.
It happens with that turn of the century thing. It's like you got to carry the one.
Yeah, right, exactly. Gotcha.
Anyway, but...
Anywho.
I mean, technically, I've never really had great knees.
Mm-hmm.
I was born with Osloger's disease.
Okay.
Which has... I've always had weak, tender knees. But, yeah, through the years of football and wear and tear of wrestling and whatnot, where I stand right now, I just had surgery on my left knee in January, and the situation right now, it didn't really heal properly, and I spoke with my surgeon. He said that when he went in there, he expected to clean up one area that he thought was an issue, and there were multiple. So that had left me with, he had seen it when he went in, a lot of arthritis issues. So what he diagnosed me with is advanced degenerative arthritis. So basically, and you can attest to this when I when you felt my knee a little bit earlier, that, you know, it's basically bone on bone, and there's really nothing they can do. I'm too young for like a knee replacement. Gave me a cortisone shot, didn't really help too much. It took some inflammation out, but there's a lot of pain still. Next step is some gel shots. So the question begs, how long am, you know, can I withstand this, or
right,
how much time do I have left?
Right, yeah.
I really don't know. Okay. you know, I'm just until
you're gonna play it by day by day.
Yeah,
I mean week by week and see how things.
Yeah,
go.
I mean until a promoter goes, you know what, you're not the same guy as you used to be, or the fans go, you don't have it anymore. I mean, I can't really tell you how much I like love this business. You know, aside from, you know, my family, my kids and whatnot, this is all I think about. You know, this is all I've ever wanted to do, except for when I was a kid, I wanted to be a cowboy. I wanted to be a bull rider, a bronc rider. Now the bull rides me. So,
all right.
You know, so, yeah. You know, I'm going to kind of ride this wave as much as I can for as long as I can. And, you know, we had a little, you know, an issue, you know, a spot that we could have, like, done, like, some TNA stuff or some other stuff. And, you know, that kind of is on hold for right now, I guess.
Gotcha.
But, you know, we'll see. You know, I'm just gonna play it by ear, listen to my body, listen to the doctor, maybe. But more importantly, listen to the fans and listen to the promoters. And when they tell me I got nothing left, then that's when I got nothing left, I guess.
Well, as I said, man, I mean, we have yet to even talk about World Wrestling, other indie promotions that you've worked for, like NWA, Mid-Atlantic, and MEWL, and a bunch of other stuff.
Where?
You remember MEWL. Come on now.
Try to wipe that out of my memory.
Well, anyways, but we are running a little bit long here. I want to kind of wrap things up, and by all means, we're going to have to do this again.
Sure.
You know, to get everything full circle, as the cliche goes. But with that, I'm going to close with my usual thing, Orlando's Phase, my favorite thing that I've discovered recently and whatnot, and I think you'll appreciate this.
Okay.
Because my fave is, because we've seen them twice on Monday Night Raw, my fave is the Wyatt family for this edition of the podcast.
I love it.
I do too, because it's a harken back to, like, gimmicks that were... They're gimmicks, but they're not cartoonish.
Exactly.
You know, like, it reminds me of...
It's different.
Yeah, it reminds me of,
it's
like...
It's fresh.
Yeah. It reminds me, obviously, of Waylon Mercy, even though that never got off the ground.
No.
But that also reminded me of Kevin Sullivan.
Yes.
You know, like, back in the 80s in Florida, when he was the satanic leader, and everybody freaked and shit themselves because he came, you know, oh my God, you know. And so I'm a big fan of the Wyatt family. That's my fave for the week. I'm glad you enjoy it.
Yes.
Did you enjoy that as well, too? Who else do you enjoy right now? Like, when you sit down and watch wrestling, what other characters, what other wrestlers make you go, oh, yeah, that was good. That was entertaining. Hardest question of the podcast. Wow.
You know what? I'm just looking for a good story.
Okay.
I'm looking to be entertained as a fan, you know? I can watch anything as a worker and go,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah, right.
But as a fan, I just want to be kind of entertained. And I mean, really, there's just, I don't want to say this in a negative way, but there's not much that lately I've been entertained by.
Okay.
The Mark Henry retirement speech was awesome.
Well, yeah, that was excellent.
That was
excellently
well played.
Executed.
Yeah, he. You know, and I like Mark Henry just because he's a big guy. He's different.
Yeah.
You know, he's not the cut guy that, you know, is a second, third generation Silver Spoon.
Right.
He worked his ass off.
Sure.
You know, you got to respect that.
Sure.
The Wyatt family promos and stuff, the way they came in was brilliant. I loved it a lot. You know.
Nothing for Curtis Axel? I'm a big fan of Curtis Axel. He entertains me. I think it's a smart pairing, him and Heyman.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely is. I think...
I think they pushed
given
him
some
too
time.
Fast. Yeah,
yes, given some time. Because he you know, you hear it all over. He's technically sound.
Mm-hmm.
He's Kurt Hennig's kid.
Yeah.
He just has to develop the whole... You know, I thought the Curtis Axel name was kind of cool, but at the same time, it's like, just call him Henning.
Yeah, right.
Just call him Joe Henning.
Right, yeah.
You know, the perfect son, Joe Henning. I don't know.
Yeah, but
at the same time, I kind of like the mix between, you know, his father and
his grandfather. Right.
To pay tribute to them. I like that. I'd almost prefer, like, Curtis Axel just kind of sounds kind of not. I don't see Curtis Axel beating anybody up.
Right.
But Kurt Axel, that'd be kind of cool. But yeah, I mean, he's kind of cool. Heyman, his stuff, his promos and stuff like that
are still gold.
Makes They're you believe. Good. Yeah. You know, no matter what kind of guy you think he is or isn't,
right.
whatever.
Right.
But you know, they brought him in for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
So those.
That's it, man. Yeah, I mean, I'd like to say some stuff in TNA, but you know, I'm kind of surprised and shocked that they kind of gave Saban the ball to kind of see how he runs with it.
Yeah, same here.
But at the same time, I like it as a swerve. See what he can do with it. See, you know, it's different.
Okay, but I think we're going to disagree on that. I don't think that was a smart move, but I digress because that's a whole other podcast in itself.
Absolutely.
Yeah, guest booking, if you will. But, all right, well, Tank, we're going to wrap things up here. I appreciate you coming on. We're definitely going to try to work to get you back on, man.
Okay.
It's been fun. Great trip down memory lane. Is there anywhere where the fans can get in touch with you?
You can look me up on Twitter, preferably at ShermanTank67. That is the handle, and you can look me up on Facebook at the same ShermanTank67, on Instagram, on Tout, on all that social media mumbo jumbo. But some of that stuff I don't even use yet. I have a Tout. You haven't used it yet. No. Okay. It's like, okay, I got 15 seconds. What do I got to say?
Yeah.
Obviously, I can't say it in an hour. So, take one.
Your Touts would be like many of them. There'd be like 6,000 of them that you piece together.
On the end of one. Yeah. You know?
All right. Well, you can get in touch with me at PVDMVP. That's where you can get a hold of me at Twitter. If you want to be old school, and shoot me an email, pvdcast@mail.com. Tank, once again, thanks for coming on.
Thank you.
And I'm going to talk at each and every one of you later. Thanks for listening, folks.